Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, this is going to be a very important one.
Hey, this is going to be a fun one. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Director of Inclusion with Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate Corporate, Mr. Tim Herr. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How's everyone?
Doing well, doing well. Well, Tim, can you talk a little bit about your work with diversity?
Absolutely. So I've had a passion for diversity for quite some time. I've been an Atlanta native for pretty much all my life. I grew up in Gwinnett. Diversity is very important in our city, in a city too busy to hate. So basically what happened was I have a real estate firm here in Atlanta, and thank you for inviting me to the show several years ago.
So your business, your original business was real estate?
Absolutely. I'm a real estate broker.
Real estate broker.
Absolutely.
So you took a normal path?
I did.
You went to Georgia Tech.
I actually did go to Georgia Tech.
And so a lot of Georgia Tech people get into real estate?
I joined the real estate market right before the downturn hit. I was fortunate to actually get interviewed by Sam Massell, former mayor of Atlanta.
Right.
And I kind of had my trajectory with the Massell family in the beginning of my real estate career. And then I opened my own real estate firm and then started working with a lot of international business, a lot of international clients, working with a lot of different people with different races and multicultural stuff. And
so that just happened organically, or you set out to do that on purpose as kind of a marketing angle for yourself?
It was my niche. When the market tanked, you got to figure something out, right? You're right out of college. You got to figure something out.
Right. You had a hustle, right?
Well, I'm still single. So right after college, I had had the opportunity to work for the Sam Massell and the Massell family at their real estate company. And then when I was able to start my own real estate firm, I started mine. And then it just organically grew into a niche market, working with international clients, different...
So how are they finding you?
That was the interesting part, because I think that because of my background, I'm Korean-American, and just my heritage and working with the Korean-American community here, it kind of just organically grew. Our firm, at the time, most of the agents were bilingual. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the bilingual agents were able to focus on the different markets. And with that, I was doing a lot more diversity work. I was doing a lot more making sure that...
But was it, when you're saying diversity, at that time, was it mainly Korean?
It was Black, African-Americans. It was LGBT. I had a big LGBT community that I worked with, the Asian-American population and Hispanic. So it was just... our office just kind of grew organically.
So you were just looking at your client base and you were going...
This is an underserved.
Not a lot of white people here.
Well, we had a couple.
You're diverse.
Absolutely. Yeah, we had a very inclusive company. Let's just say that. So we had a very inclusive firm. And it just organically kind of grew that way, just because of the language barrier, the language opportunities, and you know, of course, the co-oping agents, the agents that I would work with were all Caucasian, or they were white, or you know, whatever the case may be. And working with that community, with different communities, kind of helped me grow the importance of it. And Atlanta being the mecca of having so much, you know, diversity and inclusion,
right.
It just kind of naturally happened that way. Two years ago, I was asked to join the Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate family up in Madison, New Jersey. The corporate family,
where it's based.
Mm-hmm. So it's part of the Realogy family.
Which own several brands.
Right, exactly. They own Sotheby's, Better Homes and Gardens, right. Real Estate, ERA, Century 21. And then...
You were purely independent and then you decided to join forces?
I did.
And so, was that a big decision? Because that seemed like at least a mental shift of, hey, I'm doing this myself and I'm figuring stuff out. Now there's kind of, maybe there's some rules.
Absolutely. But it was good because I was able to spread my wings nationally, right? Mm-hmm. So I get to help a lot more clients do understand the importance of diversity. They understand the importance of inclusion.
So you're still doing real estate, or you're still now you're just focused on kind of spreading the word of how to help people create a more inclusive practice?
I practice the importance of it, how to work with.
So you're evangelizing about this message around the country
it's
now?
It's just the right thing to do. So, I mean, with that, my role has shifted also is because I was appointed as the 2018 chair for diversity on behalf of the National Association of Realtors.
So let's pause that for a second and educate our listeners to what that, like, who are those? Like, is a real estate agent, a realtor, are they the same things? Like, what does that
mean? In the state of Georgia, not all real estate agents are realtors. Realtors, we abide by a higher code of ethics. So it is a voluntary membership in the state of Georgia anyway. So if you want to be a realtor, you do have to join the realtor family. The Realtor Association is comprised of, again, real estate agents. There's 1.3 million members of us, and we do lobby on Capitol Hill to fight for rights. So, for example, we were really instrumental in the tax reform, making sure that the average American was able to keep the mortgage interest deductions, making sure that you keep the capital gains deductions, the gains out excluded from your taxes, and stuff like that. So we are a very powerful voice on lobby on Capitol Hill.
And that's the National Association of Realtors.
Absolutely.
Is kind of working for that industry. We're an independent real estate agent, just kind of on their own, entrepreneur business.
Absolutely.
Owner,
so
right?
Agents, you know.
So they're allowed to sell houses and stuff, but they're not. They don't have kind of this team behind them that's trying to lobby and trying to influence.
We're all volunteers. So I would say 99% of all of our real estate agents that serve
that are realtors.
That are realtors that serve on the National Association of Realtor Boards. They're all
practicing. That's a volunteer.
They are all volunteers. Right. We are a volunteer-based organization. So we do have the Georgia Association of Realtors. I'm a regional director here as well. Mm-hmm. So I take care of the city of Atlanta and the Atlanta realtors all the way up to the West Georgia Board of, and so I take care of the associations on a local level too. So it does go from local to state to national.
And then your role with the National Association of Realtors is chair of the diversity committee, or that's
absolutely
one of the roles you have?
I am the chair for diversity for this year. So
like, what's a day in the life of the chair for diversity?
a lot of conference calls, you know, representing all 1.3 million members. There's a lot of feedback.
What's a call you would take?
So, you know, we would, it's more of a call, instead of calls, it'd be more of concerns coming from other real estate agents with their clients. Mm-hmm. For example, you know, there's been an issue with service animals. So how do you take care of a service animal? If someone is legally prescribed to have a service animal and they have 20 cats, but the only available apartment or the available room is someone who's allergic to cats. So who takes precedence? they both have the right to housing,
right,
and it's protected by federal law.
Right.
So how do you take care of that? So all we can do as a group is to advise and try to give input.
So now you're talking to the landlord, maybe?
We're most likely, our committee may talk to the landlords or we represent, but those are the issues that we face, right?
Right.
You know, making sure
that's a real issue.
Those are definite issues that are coming out. Or how do you work, you know, what kind of issues are we facing in terms of the different communities of color? Or, you know, and this one, the 2018 is a big year because it is the 50th year anniversary of the Fair Housing Act.
And what is the Fair Housing Act? Was that 50 years ago?
50 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's a very important, it's a very, very important act that was signed by President Truman. Basically, it guarantees that we will not discriminate based upon age, sex, gender, race, religion, color, creed.
The country's been around for a few hundred years, but 50 years, we decided this was a good idea.
It was an absolutely great idea. Back in the day, we could actually put, we could discriminate based upon a deed, we put things in the deeds that would restrict people, that women cannot own real estate.
Deed for the land.
We could actually put deed restrictions in there saying that people of color cannot own this property.
Right.
So it was a very, the National Association of Real Estate Brokers, which is our African-American sister association, that organization was formed because they were not allowed to join as a realtor back, you know, a couple hundred, you know, whenever the National Association of Realtors was formed. So when NAREB was formed, their mission was to have fair housing for all. And so what happened with a NAREB in the Atlanta chapter, we call themselves the Empire Board of Realtists. So the realtists here in Atlanta, as well as NAREB, they set aside a mission to make sure that fair housing was available for all. And 3 days after, I believe it was 3 days after the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., Dr. Martin Luther King, that's when the Fair Housing Act was actually signed.
Hey, maybe we should get this done.
it is something that's needed. It's very much needed. You know, there was with the Women's Council of Realtors, women, you know, there was a lot of transactions that women were not like getting paid for in real estate transactions.
And they were the real estate agent or the realtor, and they weren't getting paid because they're women.
They were women. They weren't. So it's, you know, back until a couple, you know, this is back until the 70s or 80s. A lot of states, a lot of cities had precluded women from owning real estate unless you got permission from your father or from your husband. So it's crazy. This is not very long ago.
Right.
So it is a very, so it's, we're not celebrating the 50th year. This is a definite commemoration of the 50th
exactly.
year because we are, you know, we have to acknowledge our mistakes from the past and say, hey, we definitely were on the wrong side of the law. And now we're going to make sure that we continue on to make sure that we are doing the right thing for making sure that housing is part of the American dream. It's,
right.
it's something that we all have to do.
Now, is there things that are happening to commemorate this anniversary?
On a national level, yes. And on a state level, yes. The Georgia Association of Realtors is giving advice to the local chapters, the local associations on potentially what to do. There's different avenues of celebrating the 50th year or commemorating the 50th year, rather. We have several multicultural associations here in Atlanta as well. We have the Asian Real Estate Association of America, which is also a national association. 17.
So are those subsets of the National Association?
No.
These are separate organizations.
These are sister associations. So they're all separate. So ARIA, the Asian Real Estate Association of America. We have the National Association of Hispanic Real Estate Professionals, the National Association of Gay and Lesbian Real Estate Professionals. And
all separate associations.
All separate. And of course, we have our first, the National Association of Real Estate Brokers, which is our African-American community.
And then on behalf of the National Association of Realtors, you work with all of these groups to kind of, you know.
As the chair of diversity, I get to work with everyone. I get making sure that, you know, and everyone has their own different goals and everyone has their own different.
So how do you manage that? Because sometimes there's conflict in what they're trying to accomplish. I mean, at the heart of it, right, they're all trying to do the same thing.
Housing, equal housing.
But there's some little, like that thing you mentioned with the service animals.
Absolutely.
They each seem like they have valid points.
Absolutely. So we try to make it fair, right? We do listen to the needs of every association. Mm-hmm. Again, every association will have its own agenda for the year that's already laid out. And we'd make sure from the realtor standpoint, we make sure that we incorporate their ideas and at least listen to them so we're on the same page, mm-hmm. that we're not sending a different message out to the different communities.
Right. So, do you try to just focus on this, all the probably 95% that you all have in common?
So I have to wear different hats, right? So if mm-hmm. I'm wearing my realtor hat or if I'm wearing my ARIA hat, depending on where I am and depending on which association has invited me to speak or, you know, mm-hmm. what association I'm there on behalf of.
Right.
So it's very hard.
Now talk to the people who are maybe thinking about moving to Atlanta. As
Absolutely.
A choice, right? Because you've probably seen the city in a way that
Atlanta's
most
beautiful.
People haven't, right?
I love it.
Because there's a lot of diversity as
Absolutely.
You get to experience every single day. Pretty much every nationality can find their group here.
I sit on the Gwinnett County Public Schools Foundation. So yeah, we speak over 120 languages there now. It's quite the feat that they can have 120
but
languages.
Sometimes don't you find that in America they see Atlanta or the South and they think this is kind of a backwoodsy kind of thing. They may not understand how much diversity and how much, you know, different types of people doing different things are just as you just drive down some of the roads.
Absolutely. It's funny. When my parents had moved to Atlanta about 30 years ago or 30 plus years ago, my parents used to joke around when they said they were moving to Atlanta, they thought that we were moving to Atlantic City. And they're like, oh, you're going to go to all the casinos. We're like, no, a little further away, a little further south. No, Atlanta's beautiful because, you know, we are definitely very inclusive. And that is something that I think Atlanta has been very proud of.
Mm-hmm. But do you see that as nationally? Do you feel that reputation is
it's
out there?
Absolutely. Because of the influx of all the international businesses, we are seeing definitely. Georgia's been a very good state for economic development. Governor Deal, all the way down to Kasim Reed, you know, Mayor Reed, down to all the different Chamber of Commerce, the Cobb, you know, the Atlanta Chamber of Commerce, the Gwinnett Chamber of Commerce. They've been a very big advocate of making sure Atlanta and Georgia really, especially with the Georgia Department of Economic Development as well, they've been making sure that Georgia is on the map. We are on the map for movies. We are on the map for education. And we are on the map for housing, you know, it's a very low, so cheaper cost of living.
Right.
And when I talk to investors, you know, you say, hey, if you have $1 million, would you rather invest $1 million in LA or New York? No offense to all my friends out in the West Coast or New York, you know, where you can only buy one property, or would you rather buy several properties here and start an investment portfolio and be having passive income? So it's a very different conversation. And they're like, we've never thought of Atlanta. And so when they come visit here, they see the airport. You know, we are the Delta's here, Southwest, you know, and we have Southwest. So because being those two hubs here, they're seeing the airport and they're getting lost. They're like, wow, I didn't realize Atlanta was so big and so amazing here. And then they start getting the flair of Atlanta. You know, they come down to Buckhead and they come down downtown, midtown. And then again, we'll show the different communities depending on who our client is.
But it's just drive them down Buford Highway. It's absolutely. Like every block is a different language on the signs as you go.
Buford Highway, Pleasant Hill. I mean, we are definitely seeing a positive influence of the different communities and their effects. I mean, especially in the economic sense, we're seeing a lot of investment dollars coming into Georgia, into Atlanta. And that only helps everyone, which is a great thing.
So now, when you graduated college from Georgia Tech, you probably saw your career a certain way, and then you got into real estate, you see your career a certain way, and then you get into diversity inclusion. How are you happy and satisfied in the progression of the career? Because this is a kind of, maybe it wasn't as a little kid what you dreamed
yeah,
of.
Yeah, I don't think many people they grow up to say, hey, I want to be a diversity consultant. I don't think people even know what that is. It's funny because the word diversity it can't translate that back into a lot of Asian languages. It's when I try to tell my parents, hey, I'm leaving real estate. I'm staying in real estate, but I'm doing diversity. And they're like, what are you talking about? Because in Atlanta, you know, we grew up, you know, we don't really understand, you know, you don't really grow up saying, oh, you know, I'm going to be over here. I'm going to be over here. And we're going to play in different silos. But in terms of my life, you know, progression, I'm very happy. When I graduated.
Well, it seems like the impact you're having is really dramatic, or can be very dramatic.
I have a lot of really good mentors. So my mentors are very important to make sure that I'm on the right track and making sure that I'm speaking the right things, doing the right things, and making sure that I am able to make an impact in the different communities that doesn't have a voice or doesn't have the ability to, you know, to be here today, even in sitting on the radio, right?
Now, are you having to have a conversation where you're having to explain why diversity and inclusion is important?
Yes. So
you have to get really...
I have to go in certain areas. And I'm not talking about Atlanta, but when I talk on a national circuit, it's very important because it's something that people may not even thought about, right? They're seeing that things are changing, but they don't really understand why things are changing.
So like, how do you begin that conversation? Because like, when you say like, oh, you should be inclusive, and doesn't most people say, yeah, I'm inclusive?
So this is the way I define diversity, or this is the way I include diversity and inclusion. I think they're very two different very things. Fundamentally, I think that when you're when you're invited to a party, that's being inclusive. That's being very diverse. You can invite people of diverse communities and be like, hey, I want you to come to my party. I want you to, but the problem is when you're invited to a party, you can still silo people. We can still put, you know, all the people with bald, you know, they're all bald on table one. You can put all the millennials on table two. You can put all the Asian Americans on table three. You can put the gays on table four. But that's still siloing the different communities. Inclusion is more when you're asking to dance on the dance floor. So everyone's on the dance floor having fun.
So you just play music and let them figure it out.
Absolutely. So diversity and inclusion, they're hand in hand, but they're very two different concepts, I think. Everyone can pat themselves on the back for being diverse, but the second question I usually ask is everyone inclusive in this room? And that's when the hands usually start going down because they don't know, because they've never worked with people of different communities and stuff like that. And that's the interesting part is, you know, when everyone understands in the back of their head, it's the right thing to do, but we don't know what, but we don't understand why, or we don't understand how, right?
So do you give them tools or give them kind of some tips and tricks and tactics to actually implement some of these kind of theories into their work?
In the real estate world, it's very simple because it's monetary. I can show you, there are statistics to show what percent of Asian Americans or Black Americans or Hispanic Americans, LGBT, what percent of them own houses and home ownership rates or commercial real estate, what their buying power is, how much money they have, what the population growth is and what it's expected to be. So it's very easy to say, hi, if you don't jump on the bandwagon now, you're going to be coming to me in a year or 2 years later and asking why your market share in real estate has decreased. you don't understand why that, you know, if your community is increasing in the Asian American population, you don't know how to work with that community, and you've never done that, you're going to understand. But the Asian American community is increasing in your market. You're going to be saying, hey, I don't know what happened in 2 years, but now my market share has decreased. How do I work with this community? And it's very simple. It's everyone, there's a mental roadblock of people wondering, oh, I think I'm so scared of working with different communities. I'm going to make a mistake. Everyone makes mistakes in real estate. Everyone makes mistakes in life. And it's as long as you don't make the big faux pas in real estate, that's pretty much where
you
need to be.
But do they say, okay, I want to be more diverse. So I want to serve the Hispanic community. Absolutely. Let me hire a Hispanic person.
It's not as simple. If they're licensed, yes. So, but there are ways to work with the different communities and say, hey, look, we are very open to if you want to target the Hispanic community, hey, we want to work with the Hispanic community. But for example, the statistics have shown that second generation Latinos they speak English. So if you are having a fear of language barriers, yes, then you can work with the second generation Latinos or Hispanics who actually perceive themselves as true Americans. Now, the decision maker may not be the second generation Latino.
It might be, but
you have to understand the chain. So as long as you understand the cultural chain and say, hey, you're probably not the one to make the decision, but I can understand, I can teach you, I can talk to you. Let me show you multi-generational houses, because they're going to want to. Well, a lot of Hispanics and Asian Americans are going to look. They live with their families. You know, that is a multi-generational family. They want to see two master bedrooms. You know, so they're going to be having a different set of products.
So you have to understand kind of the nuances.
Absolutely.
And that's really the secret, not necessarily kind of the nationality of the person,
right.
But the person who really truly understands the needs of that group.
You know, if you're a brand new agent, there's statistics that show that the LGBT community does not care as much on experience of the real estate agent or the realtor. They care more about the fact that you are knowledgeable in that community. So they want to see, they're seeking for the
local.
So
like if they say, I want to be in Vinings.
They want the ninja expert.
Vinings, right? That knows all the ins and outs, all the cool spots.
Absolutely.
That's the person that's going to get their business more than I've been a real estate person for 70 years.
Or someone so there's a misconception that like people who identify themselves as LGBT or want to only work with other LGBT agents.
Right.
It's actually not true. Like the statistics have shown that says that's they're okay, you know, as long as you're an advocate, that you're an ally, that you're not going to, you know, you're not going to discriminate against the LGBT community. But that's an opportunity for new agents who are getting their foot wet. They don't have a lot of clientele, but they're really knowledgeable about their community because that's where they live. So that might be something.
And they're passionate about it.
And you find these little micro communities that are very important. So that's kind of the stuff that I like to talk about. And these studies are coming back year after year. And we work with these multicultural associations and these diverse organizations for them to give us the input and give us the data. All this data is out there. It's just every day we're bombarded with so much information, especially online, on social media. We don't know where to really focus. So my job is to make sure that we kind of focus and hone in. Give me what you need and let's kind of work on a business plan, or let's work on an idea, or let's work on something that we can do to help your business. Because at the end of the day, real estate agents are business. They're all entrepreneurs of business.
And it is kind of an eat what you kill world, right?
Absolutely.
So they got to be selling houses or selling space in order to
absolutely
put food on their table.
I mean,
why would you neglect a certain portion of your market,
especially if it's increasing?
It's
funny because everyone always says that I'm very happy with where I am. Or a lot of people are like, you know, I've never heard anybody say I don't want more business. You know, I'm good.
No. Give that to someone else.
No, I know. You can give it to the other agent. No, I've never heard anybody say that. I've always heard, how do I grow my business? How do I, 2018, you guys are setting your goals. How do I bring my business to the next level?
Right.
I want to double my business. I want to triple my business. But how do you do that when you've been stagnant or you've already kind of, you know, you've already been in your little bubble?
Right. You put yourself in a box when you don't have to.
Absolutely. So it's great to venture out and think outside the box once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely associate and work hard with the different associations because they're all there.
Now, can you share a story maybe that you worked with a group that wasn't maybe as inclusive or diverse as they could be, and then you've kind of opened their eyes and then they said, okay, let's explore different groups of people, and then they were able to grow their business?
Sure. You know, I won't give
you don't a, have to name their names.
So you know, I was in a city, and they're a pretty big, decent sized office, and they, you know, I can give two examples, and they're, you know, they have one was, we don't have any LGBT identity. There's no gay people in my office, and I would find that very hard to believe, just because it was a very big city, and and they have a chamber, they have an LGBT chamber of commerce and stuff like that. And then the other part that was that kind of surprised me was they.
This is the leadership, right?
They're like, we don't have any gay people anywhere near. And you're like, I'm like, well,
talk to Bob.
Yeah,
I want to talk to Bob.
I would say, like, look at the Chamber of Commerce and look at the membership base. It's quite a big membership base, and that's where I usually turn to, is see if they have any big advocacy groups in that community. Or and then the other one kind of threw me off guard was, there's no Asian Americans growing in this market. And I'm like, well, you do realize that there was a big Asian American factory to just open down the street. So I don't understand why you're not going.
They have to live somewhere.
Yeah, they have to live somewhere. They're not all going to apartments. They're going somewhere. So they're like, oh no, I totally forgot about that community. That's, you know, that and usually what happens is their loyalty is a very big thing in the multicultural communities, right? If you're very loyal to one agent or one community.
Is that how it works?
Yeah. So if you can work with, if you can capture the hearts and win the loyalty and the trust.
And what are some ways that you would do that in a community?
In the Hispanic and Asian and the Black and a lot of these different communities, it is a longer cycle. You have to kind of gain their trust.
And it's not something like, oh, I'm going to just put an ad in the newspaper and then I win, right?
I wish it was that easy. the ROI is very good, right?
But you got to do the work, right? You got to go and go to the meetings. You got to show up, right?
And be
visible.
And be visible. But you also just, as long as you are the advocate for that community, or you're an advocate for that family, and you truly understand the needs of the community, I think that's what sets you apart. And you know, that's what sets us apart in any business, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you're in real estate, if you are there for the community, we're not saying that you have to march on, you know, lobbying steps or do anything
like
that.
It's not like every single day. Right. This shouldn't be your new job.
Absolutely,
right?
Right? But as long as you can work with the communities and sit down with the families and say, hey, what is your real need? You know, for example, when I talk about the multi-generational families that want to own, you know, two masters in a home, I mean, those are going to be the needs of the family. So you have to kind of understand the needs, and kind of those kind of things are the ones that give you validation. With the different communities, making sure that you really understand what the struggles were, or maybe giving them different products. You know, there are different loan products. In real estate, I would talk about different loan products that cater to that community. Mm-hmm. NARA, the National Association of Real Estate Brokers, is on they have a new campaign called 2 in 5. So they want to increase they want to have 2 million new Black homeownership in 5 years. And so a lot of the lenders and the banks are going behind and rallying behind this 2 in 5 program. Mm-hmm. So that's very important. So that would be a demographic, you know, if you work with a lot of African Americans.
So to be knowledgeable and find
the loan officers,
what's out there.
Loan officers that cater to the 2 in 5 program.
And then there are loan officers that do that. So it's your job to find them.
Absolutely.
And to kind of connect the people, because that, if you want to serve that market.
And that's what I did when I started my real estate company. When I was working with a lot of international companies, or international clients, I had international foreign loan programs. Mm-hmm. So I had lenders that was able to do foreign loan programs that did not fit in the traditional box. So we had international banks that was willing to lend to the international clients.
Right. Because they're comfortable with that.
Because they have the money and the product base and the knowledge base behind it. So that's how you kind of, and bringing those to value add services.
And being that connector, that's an important component.
Absolutely.
Because that's what you're bringing to the table.
I never spoke a lot of the languages. I mean, it was interesting because I don't speak Chinese. I don't speak Viet. I don't speak, you know, I don't speak French or Brazilian, you know,
still able to do business with them.
Absolutely. Because, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's a matter of bringing the value add. And people were seeking me and saying, hey, I know you don't speak Portuguese, or I know you don't speak Spanish, or, you know, to a limited degree. You know, you have to watch out, because you have to make sure that you are servicing your client to the best of your ability. So, you know, I had interpreters, and I made sure that I was able to portray everything.
As long as you can communicate.
Yes.
That's the bottom line, right? So what's next? How can we help you get the word out about this important commemoration? What's the next big event to commemorate the Fair Housing Act?
The Fair Housing Act is, we're actually in Georgia. We're still figuring things out. We're definitely, or there's talks of going down to our Civil Rights Museum and making sure that we acknowledge that. We have a panel coming up with all the multicultural associations. Mm-hmm. And
but the National Association of Realtors has a building right there. There's a people that are in real estate should consider being part of this group, right?
We so the National Association of Realtors, we're meeting in May. So mm-hmm. we are at the Smithsonian and the brand new part of the wing, and we invited Congressman Don Lewis to speak, and there's a lot of things going on. It's going to be a year long event because mm-hmm. obviously there's there's the Housing Institute, the Planning Institute, a lot of the associations are still doing things. So it's going to be a lot of year long events starting in a very few short weeks, just talking about the Fair Housing Act and how important it is.
Well, if somebody wanted to talk to you and maybe educate their company or themselves about diversity and inclusion, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
You can get a hold of me at tim.her@gmail.com. I'm not related to Ben Hur, but I don't look like him. I probably wouldn't be here if I look like Charles Esten. But no, I if you want to get a hold of me, my easiest way is my email is tim.her@gmail.com.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Absolutely. This was a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
All right, this is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.